Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter and Brian Lynn. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly and I will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Mario Ritter.
Officials in central China are increasing pressure on unregistered religious groups and religious centers, including churches for Christians. Observers say Chinese President Xi Jinping aims to contain the growth and spread of Christianity in the country. China's government tightly controls the activities of religious groups. Jonathan Liu is a clergyman with the Chinese Christian Fellowship of Righteousness. Liu lives in the United States. His group has offices in San Francisco, California. Liu told VOA China's campaign against Christians and their churches has intensified in Henan Province since August. He said at least four churches in Nanyang City were raided this month. Liu said people with ties to Chinese churches have told him that many unidentified police and local government officials were involved in the raids. He said they showed up at the churches without search warrants from a court. The unidentified police and local officials were said to have removed religious symbols such as crosses and covered up signs hung on walls. They also damaged or seized church property before closing the churches. Liu said Christians who resisted were either beaten or taken away. VOA has not been able to reach police and religious affairs officials in Henan and Beijing for comment. Since February, hundreds of family churches in Henan have reportedly been closed. That is when officials put into effect new regulations for religious affairs. Family churches, also known as house churches, are independent of state-approved religious organizations. Liu said that provincial officials plan to merge many local Christian churches. Some local priests told me that up to two-thirds of churches there may be closed down. Raids have also been carried out on churches in two other provinces, Guangdong and Heilongjiang. Fu Zengying heads the Divinity School at Chengchi College at the Chinese University of Hong Kong. He noted that Henan has one of the country's largest Christian populations. He said that while the policy to control religious groups comes from the central government, the campaign in Henan seemed unusually forceful. An earlier campaign in Zhejiang, he said, had only targeted crosses set on top of churches. Zhejiang carried out a forceful campaign against churches between 2014 and 2016. Observers say that the Communist Party's effort to extend control over religious groups may be increasing. They said the effort appears to be directed at Protestants, Catholics, Muslims, and Buddhists. For example, more than 1 million Muslims are believed to have been detained in Xinjiang in what are being called re-education camps. In early June, Buddhist religious workers in Tibet were asked to complete 3 days of training in Lhasa, the area's capital. They were to learn about the government's policies on religions and socialism with Chinese characteristics to strengthen their political beliefs. China's Communist Party has made it clear in recent years that the teachings of all religious groups should be secondary to the goals of the party. Last year, speaking at the 19th Party Congress, Xi spoke about religion. He said, "Religions in China must be Chinese in orientation and provide active guidance to religions so that they can adapt themselves to socialist society." Liu said even registered Christians face difficult tests. Those who fail government tests on values of Chinese socialism or Xi thoughts can be banned from serving in churches. Liu said 1/3 of Christian clergy who take the tests may be disqualified. Recently, almost 30 preachers of family churches from across China released a joint statement. They urged Chinese officials to stop suppressing churches. They added that such acts of brutality have not been seen since the Cultural Revolution. China's constitution guarantees religious freedom. But as one Chinese Christian told VOA, "The police and local religious affairs bureau keep harassing my church. Please explain to me, how is my religious freedom guaranteed?" It is estimated that about 70 million people follow Christianity in China. That is close to the 88 million who are Communist Party members. I'm Mario Ritter.
A United Nations report says about half of students aged 13 to 15 worldwide have experienced some form of violence in school. This number represents about 150 million students from around the world. The report was released by the UN Children's Agency, known as UNICEF. Included in the 13 to 15 age group were students who reported being in a physical fight within the past year. Also included were students who said they had been bullied in the last month. For millions of students around the world, the school environment is not a safe space to study and grow, the report said. It is a danger zone where they learn in fear. Some information in the study was collected by UNICEF. Information on some countries came from governments or other organizations. The report identifies bullying as one of the biggest problems facing schools. About 1 in 3 students reported they had experienced bullying at school. In industrialized nations, 17 million students aged 13 through 19 admitted to bullying others at school. UNICEF said certain youth groups are more likely to be victims of bullying. These include ethnic minorities, children with disabilities, and members of the LGBT community. In Britain, one study found that 30-50% of young school students who identified as gay had experienced bullying. The report said studies have shown that boys are generally more likely to experience bullying that includes physical violence or threats. Girls are more likely to be victims of psychological or relational forms of bullying. This can involve spreading false information about people or shutting them out of social groups, the report said. Cyberbullying is also an increasing problem for students, UNICEF said. This form of bullying is described as willful and repeated harm caused through the use of computers, mobile phones, and other electronic devices. Cyberbullying can result in victims developing alcohol and drug problems or having difficulties with schoolwork. In severe cases, it can result in suicide, the report said. The study found about 1/3 of students aged 13 to 15 reported being involved in physical fights. Data from 25 countries showed that 20% of girls and 50% of boys reported physical attacks by other students at least once during the past year. The report said that violence can also happen as a form of punishment in some schools. In some classrooms, teachers and other school officials are far too often the source of fearful learning environments. UNICEF said about half of all school-aged children live in countries where corporal punishment is not fully banned by law in schools. The organization estimates there are about 720 million children who are not protected from this form of violence. Armed conflict is another form of violence. The report estimates that about 158 million young people live in conflict-affected areas. For these students, classrooms can be no safer than the communities they live in. The UN said it identified more than 500 direct attacks in 2017 on schools in some countries. Among them, Nearly 400 happened in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. In South Sudan, 26 attacks were identified, while 67 were reported in the Syrian Arab Republic. At least 20 school attacks happened in Yemen. UNICEF said many of these attacks were deadly. The report said school shootings have also become a major form of violence in many areas. Between November 1991 and May 2018, 70 school shootings were reported in 14 countries. Each shooting involved two or more victims, with at least one death. In addition to the harmful physical and mental effects of violence in schools, the problem can also have great economic costs. The report estimates the worldwide costs of violence against children are as high as $7 trillion. UNICEF is calling on governments to develop and enforce laws and policies aimed at keeping students safe in schools, as well as in their online experiences. The organization has also launched an internet campaign called #EndViolence in an effort to raise awareness and increase public support for the fight against violence and bullying in schools. I'm Brian Lynn.
And now we present The Making of a Nation. Today, Kelly Jean Kelly and I continue the story of the presidency of Barack Obama. Conflicts related to race happened throughout Obama's time in office. Early in his first term, police arrested a Harvard University professor in his own home because they believed he was breaking into the house. The professor was an African-American man. Obama commented publicly on the arrest, saying the police had acted stupidly. He added, "There's a long history in this country of African Americans and Latinos being stopped by law enforcement more than was fair." Obama's words made some police officers and other Americans angry. The public reaction showed that while the country had elected an African American president, race was still a sensitive issue.
2 years later, racial tensions exploded over the shooting of a 17-year-old African-American named Trayvon Martin. He was walking in a Florida neighborhood when a leader of the local neighborhood watch group shot him, claiming self-defense. The shooter was tried and found not guilty of a crime. But many Americans believed the case showed that African Americans were unfairly treated. In answer, Obama called for the country to come together. He spoke about Martin's parents, noting that he was raising two children.
You know, if I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon. And, I think they are right to expect that all of us, as Americans, are going to take this with the seriousness it deserves and that we're going to get to the bottom of exactly what happened.
Yet, the nation was facing racial conflict again soon. In 2014, a police officer killed another unarmed African-American teenager. Michael Brown was suspected of robbing a store in Ferguson, Missouri. The shooting led to weeks of protests in Ferguson, some of them violent. Later, a jury ruled that the officer had not committed a crime. But the federal government found that the city's police and court system had a history of race-related abuses. Feelings about Ferguson were still high when, in June 2015, a white man shot and killed 9 African Americans at a prayer meeting in Charleston, South Carolina. The shooter was clear that he targeted the victims because of their race. In the days that followed, Obama traveled to Charleston and met with the families of the victims. Historian Michael Nelson remembered him speaking at the funeral of the clergyman killed in the attack.
In addition to the words he spoke, I started singing.
Amazing grace.
The old hymn, which, by the way, is a hymn in black churches and white churches, Amazing Grace. That's something that presidents don't usually do, but it really did sort of connect with the moment. It's an affirmation of, you know, as bad as things are, they will get better, or they can get better if we recommit ourselves.
Yet, as historian Michael Nelson notes, it is one thing to meet people's emotional needs and another to make political changes. Obama did not succeed in persuading Congress to pass national gun control reforms. His most serious effort came after a mass shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Connecticut in 2012. 20 young children and 6 adults died in the attack. The shooter was a 21-year-old man with mental health problems, an interest in violence, and the legal right to use a gun. He had no apparent reason to target the school or the children. Obama spoke out emotionally after the shooting.
Every time I think about those kids, it gets me mad.
But a majority of lawmakers and many Americans did not think the federal government should, or even could, limit the right to own guns.
Early in his presidency, Obama and his administration expanded health care for Americans. Working with administration officials, Congress developed and later approved a bill to help people who could not pay for health insurance. It set up a system so that the federal government would pay for some of the cost. It also required insurance companies to help people who were already sick. Under the measure, insurance plans for parents would pay health care costs for their children until they reached age 26. President Obama signed the bill into law, but his administration's efforts were not popular with everyone. Critics objected that the law sharply increased government involvement in American society. Historian Michael Nelson says some people disliked the measure so much that they called the law Obamacare in order to blame the president for it.
Obama later said, "I'm fine with that," because that extended the protection of health insurance to many Americans who otherwise didn't have it or were in jeopardy of losing it. I think, you know, Obamacare has become now kind of part of the fabric of American national life. And the fact that his name is attached to it means that people will always associate that with him.
Obama was able to pass health care reforms because his party, the Democrats, won control of both the House of Representatives and the Senate in the 2008 elections. 2 years later, as a sign that his policies were not popular with many Americans, the Democrats lost control of the House. Obama noted the defeats. He said after the 2010 elections that the Democrats took a shellacking. 4 years later, the party also lost control of the Senate. As president, Obama took steps he believed were needed to make all Americans equal under the law. In 2012, he expressed support for same-sex marriage. 2 years later, Obama signed an executive order to protect the rights of LGBT employees in the workplace. LGBT is short for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transsexual. Many Americans opposed the president's policies on social questions. On international issues, Obama and his government faced challenges in Libya, Syria, and with Russia. And he was both supported and criticized for supporting the Paris Climate Agreement, a deal designed to slow rising temperatures. Obama was also criticized for agreeing to a nuclear deal with Iran. For years, Iran claimed its nuclear program was only for peaceful purposes. Yet the United States and other countries were not so sure. Under the 2015 agreement, the Iranian government promised to limit its nuclear activities and permit visits by international inspectors. In exchange, world powers agreed to ease economic actions against Iran.
Without the support of lawmakers, in his last months in office, Obama used executive orders to carry out policies. The actions have the force of law at the time, but they can be easily overturned by future presidents. Some Americans took aim at Obama personally. They questioned whether he was even born in the United States. A businessman led a call for Obama to release documents proving where he had been born. That man was Donald Trump. As Obama's time in office was coming to an end, Trump announced he would run for president himself. And in November 2016, he took the White House.
That brings our history series to a close for now. Thank you for joining us for The Making of a Nation, American History, from VOA Learning English. And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.